You're listening to agentdrivendevelopment.com.
This one is personal. It's based on my own experience, conversations with friends who are in the middle of these decisions right now, and patterns I keep seeing repeated across the industry. It's not a framework, it's not a methodology. It's my opinion on a question that more people are asking than are willing to talk about publicly. You've got the offer letter open in one tab and LinkedIn in the other. Or you're sitting in day three of a four-day quarterly planning session, watching a room full of adults debate how many story points fit in a t-shirt size while a facilitator asks everyone to dot vote on sticky notes that will be photographed, transcribed into Jira, and never looked at again. Somewhere around hour six, while someone argues that a large is really two mediums, you start wondering if Office Space was a documentary, or maybe the question isn't whether to leave. Maybe you're a director who just lost three engineers this quarter and you're staring at exit interview notes that all say the same thing. Maybe you're a CTO who signed a seven-figure AI tooling contract and your org still ships at the same velocity it did in 2023, except now it ships with more expensive software licenses. Whatever side of this you're on, the diagnostic is the same. There are two kinds of engineering organizations right now, and the gap between them is not small. It's not slightly better tooling, it's a fundamentally different way of building software. The question, whether you're asking it about your next job or your current one, is which kind of organization you're sitting in. Pause 1.0s, let me walk you through the diagnostic. The word adopted has been stretched to the point of meaninglessness. Having AI tool licenses is not adoption. Running a prompt engineering workshop is not adoption. Adoption means the way you build, test, review, approve, and deploy software has fundamentally changed, not the coding step. The whole thing before you get into the AI-specific stuff, start with the basics. These have nothing to do with pre-AI or post-AI. They're about whether the organization values the people who work there, and they're a leading indicator for everything else, business model durability. Green flag, the company's core business isn't easily replaced by AI, or if it is exposed, leadership has a credible plan to adapt and is already executing on it. You're not joining a company that'll be a case study in disruption by 2028. Red flag, the company's revenue depends on work that AI is learning to do faster and cheaper every quarter. Manual testing services, staff augmentation, basic development, outsourcing, rote content production. Nobody in leadership is talking about it. Or worse, they're talking about it and doing nothing. You're joining a company whose business model has an expiration date that's closer than your vesting schedule, compensation, green flag, market rate or above, revisited as the market reprices. Nobody fights you over $10,000 when you ship $500,000 of value a quarter. Red flag below market, justified by internal equity. Comp bands last updated before AI changed the value curve. Your best people know they're underpaid, they're polite about it until they're not. Healthcare and benefits, green flag, modern, comprehensive, revisited regularly. The org treats benefits as part of how it competes for talent, not as a cost to minimize. Red flag legacy package. Nobody has renegotiated in years. High deductibles, limited mental health coverage, benefits that signal we care about you on the careers page and we care about the budget on your pay stub. PTO, green flag, real time off. People take it, leadership models it. Nobody tracks whether you took a Friday after a big ship. Red flag, unlimited PTO, where the unwritten rule is 2 weeks a year, and anything more gets a raised eyebrow from your manager. Or a fixed bank so small you hoard days like currency. An organization that nickels and dimes your compensation, your healthcare, and your time off is telling you how it values its people. Ask yourself this, will this company give me unlimited tokens? Will it invest in frontier model access without making me justify every API call to finance? If it won't invest in your well-being, it won't invest in your tools. The way a company treats your benefits is a preview of how it'll treat your infrastructure. Pause 0.5's Exxon. Now, the AI-specific diagnostic, a note for those of you in regulated industries, financial services, healthcare, insurance, some approval gates exist because a regulator requires them, not because someone was being cautious, that's real. The question isn't whether governance exists, the question is whether the governance that exists is the minimum required by regulation or whether your organization piled discretionary process on top of regulatory requirements and never separated the two, most haven't separated them. That's where the theater lives. Be honest about which column describes your organization. Team size per feature, green flag, 2 to 3 engineers, ship end to end. The team owns spec, code, tests, and deployment. Red flag, 8 to 12 people across product, design, engineering, QA, security, DevOps. Coordination overhead is the majority of the cost. AI tool access, green flag, infrastructure. Frontier models available, no ticket required, no token tracking, no procurement committee. Try a new tool Tuesday, use it Tuesday, red flag, rationed. One model approved 6 months ago, two generations behind. Tokens tracked, every new tool requires a security review that takes longer than the tool's useful life. Ship frequency. Green flag, days. Continuous deployment is the default. Red flag, quarterly at best. Release trains, code freezes, scheduled deployment windows. A hotfix needs the same approval chain as a new feature. Testing. Green flag, automated full-stack AI agents, write and maintain tests. The testing pyramid is a square because the cost constraint that shaped the pyramid is gone. Red flag, manual QA team clicking through spreadsheet scripts every release. Automated coverage is low because nobody had time to write tests, and now nobody has time to maintain the ones that exist. Code review, green flag hours, process redesign for AI assisted volume, red flag days. Two senior engineers bottleneck everything. Reviews are superficial because reviewers are overwhelmed. Everyone knows it, nobody changes it. Bureaucracy, green flag, low security built into the pipeline. Architecture decisions don't need a six-week review board. Flat enough that an engineer with a good idea can get it in front of someone who can say yes within a day. Red flag, high four-day sprint plannings, two-hour refinement sessions, daily stand-ups that take 45 minutes. Retros that produce action items nobody tracks. Ceremonies that exist because someone read a book in 2014, not because they produce outcomes. Architecture review boards, change advisory boards, security sign-offs, 12 layers of management between you and anyone who can make a real decision. Governance is theater, SDLC, green flag, redesign for AI native speed, lean governance, no human bottleneck at every stage. Red flag, 2019 process with AI bolted onto the coding step. Everything upstream and downstream is exactly as slow as before. The bottleneck moved, nobody adjusted. Engineer trust, green flag, autonomy over tools, workflow, and decisions, hired for judgment, allowed to use it. Red flag, approved tools, approved workflows, approved everything. Deviation discouraged. Engineers treated as interchangeable line items. If you're honest about where your organization sits on both of these, you already know the answer to the question in the title. What you do with that answer depends on who you are. Pause, OneCoin zeros. Let's start with developers. Consider someone like Priya. She spent 18 months at a post-AI startup. 12 engineers, no QA team, no release train. She shipped features end-to-end. Her PRs merged in hours. She deployed when the code was ready, not when the calendar said she could. She paired with AI agents the way a previous generation of engineers paired with each other, except the agent never called in sick and never had a conflicting meeting. Then a Fortune 500 came calling. $40,000 raise, senior title. Name brand resume line? She went to the on-site. They walked her through the floor. She saw the QA bullpen. She asked about deploy frequency, and the hiring manager said, "We do releases every 2 weeks, sometimes three." She asked about PR turnaround, usually under a week. She asked what AI tools the engineers used. We have an autocomplete tool, and we're evaluating agentic options for next year. She turned it down. It wasn't an easy decision. She ran the numbers twice. She called her partner. She lost a night of sleep over walking away from that kind of money and that kind of name on her resume. But she kept coming back to the same calculation. The $40,000 wasn't enough to cover the cost of slowing down. If he spent 2 years in that environment, she'd come out the other side with a senior title and a skill set that had stopped compounding the day she walked in. Priya can wait. The right role will come. A company that scores on the left column and pays what she's worth will find her. Or she'll find it, because AI native engineers are the scarcest resource in the market right now, and that's not changing anytime soon. She doesn't need to take the first offer that waves money at her. She needs to take the offer that lets her keep building at the pace she's earned. The money will catch up. It usually does for engineers at this level. And when it does, she won't have traded 2 years of compounding to get it. That's the math most developers don't run. Your career compounds the way interest does. Two engineers starting at the same level today will be in completely different places in 24 months, depending on which column they work in. The one shipping with AI agents isn't 2 years ahead on a linear scale. They're operating in a fundamentally different paradigm, and the distance grows every quarter. Now, before you start updating your resume, if you don't love your current team, or the work feels stale, or your manager is someone you tolerate rather than someone who makes you better, but the org itself scores on the left column, real PTO, frontier model access, trust, a pipeline that gets out of your way, then pause. That setup is rarer than you think. Burnout is real. A bad quarter on a good team in a good org is not the same thing as being in the wrong place. Sometimes the answer is a different project, a different team, or a hard conversation with your manager about what you need. Don't confuse a bad quarter with a bad company. And if you're thinking about staying because you want to be the one who transforms the place, do the math. By the time you drag a pre-AI org into operating like it's 2026, it'll be 2028. You'll have spent 2 years fighting governance committees and educating skeptical VPs while engineers at post-AI companies spent those years shipping. The market is paying a premium for people who build, not people who manage change programs. Pause 5 seconds, one more thing, because I don't want to pretend this is simple. Not everyone can leave. You might be mid-vest on equity that represents real money. You might be on a visa tied to your employer. You might have a pension timeline or a financial situation that makes jumping a genuine risk, not just an inconvenience. And the post-AI startup that ships daily isn't automatically the right bet either. Startups fold, runway runs out. Equity can be worth zero. The diagnostic tells you what to look for, not what to do. Your constraints are yours, and nobody else gets to dismiss them. Here's the interview checklist. Work these into the conversation, not as an interrogation, but as the questions you actually care about. How many people does it take to ship a feature from idea to production? What AI tools do your engineers use today? And who decides what's available? What's the token budget per engineer? Is there one? How often do you deploy to production? Do you have a separate QA organization? What's the average time from PR open to PR merged? How many approval gates sit between code complete and production? When was the last time you removed a process, a gate, or a standing meeting? If I want to try a new AI tool next week, what do I need to do? What changed about your SDLC in the last 12 months? If the answers sound like the left column, go. Build things, grow. If the answers sound like the right column, you're walking into 2019 with better autocomplete. The logo on the building and the number on the offer letter won't change that. Pause 1.0s. Now let me talk about leaders. The diagnostic applies to you the same way it applies to developers, except the stakes are higher and the questions are different. Consider someone like Kevin, director of engineering, 4 years in the role, about 150 engineers. He was good at his job. He cared about his people. He spent 6 months building a business case for agentic development tools, showed productivity data, got his CTO on board. The proposal went to the budget meeting, and the CFO sided with the VP of QA. The argument, developers couldn't be trusted to test their own code, let alone trust AI agents to do it. The QA organization needed to stay. The manual testing process needed to stay. The token budget was cut in half because, in the CFO's words, we need to see proof before we invest further. Kevin sat in that meeting and realized he wasn't fighting a resource allocation battle. He was fighting a belief system. The organization believed at the leadership level that engineers weren't trustworthy enough to own quality, that the only reliable way to ensure software worked was to have a separate group of humans manually verify every change. He'd spent 18 months managing friction instead of building things. His technical skills were atrophying while he sat in budget meetings arguing for tools his team needed a year ago. Sigh, Kevin started asking himself a question that most leaders avoid. Is this where I want to spend the next 3 years? Not how do I fix this org? That's the question leadership tells you to ask. The real question is whether the years you spend fighting governance committees and belief systems are years you want to trade for the years you could spend building. Kevin took an IC role at a company that ships with AI agents, senior staff engineer, smaller title, less direct authority, a pay cut he doesn't talk about. The first 3 months were humbling. He hadn't written production code in over a year, and the tooling had moved faster than he expected, but he's shipping features again, and his technical judgment is rebuilding in ways that matter. He told people he took a step back. Some of them believed him. That path isn't for everyone. Some leaders want to lead. If that's you, the diagnostic still applies, but the questions you need to ask when evaluating your next role are about whether you'll have the authority and the organizational support to actually change things, or whether you're signing up to manage friction for 3 years while your own skills decay. Here's the leadership checklist. These aren't the polite questions. These are the ones that tell you whether the org will let you lead or whether you're walking into Kevin's budget meeting on day one. How fast has this organization changed a major process in the last 12 months? Which one and who drove it? If I need to eliminate an approval gate or disband a review board, what does that process look like? Who has to agree? What constraints will I inherit that I can't change? Regulatory is fine. We've always done it this way. Is not. Does the engineering org own its deployment pipeline, or does another team control when code goes live? What's the token budget for AI tools and who controls it? Is that budget in my org or in procurement? Is there a separate QA organization? If yes, is that negotiable? What happened to the last leader who tried to change the SDLC here? Did they succeed and are they still here? How does the CFO view engineering investment? Is it a cost center or a value driver? If I want to restructure teams to ship with 2 to 3 engineers instead of 8 to 12, what stands in my way? What does the executive team believe about AI adoption right now? Are they aligned, or am I walking into a political fight? Can I hire the AI native engineering talent I need and pay above market to get them? Or will I lose every candidate I want to a comp committee that takes 3 weeks to approve an offer and then counters 40,000 below? Ask, what's the CISO's posture on AI tooling? Are they a partner who helps engineers move fast within guardrails? Or are they the person who wants to unplug every machine that connects to an external API? You'll know the answer within 10 minutes of meeting them. What percentage of my time will HR require me to spend on non-engineering work? Talent reviews, calibration sessions, engagement survey action plans, mandatory HR one-on-ones. Some of it is necessary. If the total consumes 40 to 50% of your calendar, you're not being hired to lead engineering. You're being hired to service a process. If the answers tell you that the org is ready to change and you'll have the authority to drive it, that could be the right move. If the answers tell you that you'll spend your first year building consensus for things that should have been decided already, navigating a CISO who treats every API call as a threat vector, losing candidates to a comp committee that moves slower than the market, and sitting in calibration sessions while your roadmap stalls, you're signing up for Kevin's experience with a better title. The same compounding math that applies to developers applies to you. The years you spend managing organizational friction are years you're not building, not growing technically, and not learning the paradigm that's reshaping the industry. Some of the best career moves in the next 2 years will be leaders who step back to IC roles at post-AI companies. Not because leadership doesn't matter, because leading in an organization that won't change isn't leadership. It's administration pause 1.0s. Now, executives, this part is for you. Both columns in that diagnostic describe engineering organizations you're paying for. One ships. The other performs elaborate rituals about shipping. Both cost real money every month. Only one produces proportional results. The pre-AI org isn't cheaper. 8 people in 7 weeks to ship what 2 people ship in days is not a staffing model. It's a tax on organizational indecision. You're paying fully loaded costs for coordination overhead, manual testing cycles, approval queues, and every person in the value stream who touches a feature without writing a line of code. I was in a steering committee last quarter where the CFO finally did the math. Nobody had bothered to do before. They were spending $320,000 per feature shipped. He found a comparable company, same vertical, similar complexity, with 12 AI native engineers spending $17,000 per feature and shipping 10 times the volume. The room got quiet, laughed. The CFO didn't need another AI strategy deck. He needed the diagnostic and a calculator. The developer is deciding where to invest their career. The leader is deciding whether the next org will let them lead or make them administer. Your challenge is different from both. You own the governance model, the HR model, the operating model, and the metrics. You're the person who can actually redesign the organization so that it retains the Priyas and empowers the Kevins instead of losing them. But that only works if you're willing to change the things you control. Here's the executive checklist. These are the questions you should be asking yourself and your leadership team, not next quarter. Now, have you redesigned your SDLC for AI native development? Or did you bolt AI onto the 2019 process? The bottleneck has moved from coding to everything around the code. If your governance, review, testing, and deployment processes haven't changed, you've got a faster engine on the same chassis. Your engineers know this. It's why they leave. Can your organization hire and retain AI native talent? The engineers who operate in post-AI environments are worth more than your comp bands reflect. If your talent team is rejecting candidates on internal equity grounds and your comp committee takes 3 weeks to approve an offer, you're not competing for talent. You're watching it walk to your competitors while your process runs its course. Can you pay above market for the people who will transform your output? If the answer is no, HR won't allow it. That is the answer. Have you built an environment where your best people want to stay? Retention isn't a bonus problem. It's an organizational design problem. Engineers stay where they can build. They stay where code review takes hours, not days, where they deploy when the code is ready, where nobody rations their tools or questions their judgment. If your org scores on the right column of the diagnostic, your best people aren't leaving because of comp. They're leaving because the organization tells them every day through its processes that it doesn't trust them. What's your CISO's actual posture on AI tooling? Is security a partner that enables engineers to move fast within guardrails? Or is it the department that blocks every external API, delays every tool evaluation, and treats every AI initiative as a risk to be mitigated rather than a capability to be enabled? If your CISO's default is no until proven safe rather than yes within these boundaries, your AI adoption will move at the speed of your security review queue, which is to say it won't move. Does your HR model create value or consume it? Mandatory talent review cycles, calibration sessions, engagement survey action plans, quarterly people reviews, Ask yourself honestly, does this operating model help your leaders build better teams, or does it consume 40 to 50% of their time on process that produces slides nobody acts on? Your Kevins are sitting in those meetings instead of building. Some of them are deciding to leave because of it. Have you redesigned your governance model, or is it still theater? The approval gates that made sense when humans wrote all code at human speed don't make sense when agents produce code at 3 times the velocity. Every week you defer this redesign is a week your teams absorb the drag and your best people reconsider their options. Are you willing to build a parallel organization? You may need to build a new org rather than transform the existing one. The existing org has 20 years of accumulated process antibodies. A parallel org demonstrates what's possible without requiring you to win every internal argument first. It also gives your best people a place to go that isn't your competitor. Are you measuring what matters? If you're measuring utilization instead of cycle time, you're optimizing for the wrong thing. Your board doesn't care if your engineers are busy. They care if the company is shipping. Revenue per engineer tells you whether the AI investment is producing returns. Feature cost tells you whether your org structure is a multiplier or a tax. If your org scores on the right column, your best people already know it. The question isn't whether you can afford to change, it's whether you can afford not to. Pause one working on it is not the same thing as having changed. We ran a workshop is not the same thing as having redesigned your governance model. We bought the tools is not the same thing as having built an organization that can use them. Which column describes your organization today? And what are you going to do about it this quarter, not next year? Because every Priya who interviews at your company is running this diagnostic in her head before she leaves the parking lot. And every Kevin on your leadership team is doing the math on how many more budget meetings he's willing to lose before he stops fighting and starts building somewhere else. This is Norman from Agent Driven Development.
You've been listening to agentdrivendevelopment.com.